this is a propitious time, George. This is the 40th anniversary of Moore's Law, the law that says the number of logic transistors on a computer chip doubles about every 18 months. It's been 40 years now. It was, I believe, April 19th, 1965, when George Moore, now at Intel, published an article predicting that kind of effect, but not for this many years, in Electronics Magazine. And it's also this year, George, that it appears we cross a new threshold in computer chip density. We go beyond a billion transistors per chip. Intel has a chip coming out for computer servers that they claim will have, I believe, 1.7 billion transistors on it. The current ones have, big ones have about 400 million. No small matter, but the number of transistors continues to shrink. Every few years, the scientists say this has to stop, and those of us who've been writing about this for some time, and in my case, it underpins my book, Heaven in the Chip, and in effect, a companion novel about World War III, Nanotime, have had to endure a lot of criticism on this front, but now it looks as if this will hold up good, at least 10 years, maybe 15, and as we make the transition from the microprocessor to the nanoprocessor, which tens of thousands of very smart people are working on as we speak.
Well, and that too will be a dramatic, there'll be another Moore out there somewhere who'll come up with his own theories and concepts for nanotechnology. That's going to take it even further down the line, won't it?
Even further. Right now, a lot of the transistor sizes are about 400 atoms across. And again, if you go to my website, you can see a paper from me and my colleagues on using carbon nanotubes, the current nanotech device of choice that are only a few atoms across. These are devices, George, that about 100,000th the thickness of a piece of hair, and they look like rolled up chicken wire. They're made of carbon atoms, as is, for example, diamond and graphite, but they're organized differently. Again, very much like the hexagonal patterns in chicken wire, but they have incredible strength and the ability to conduct electricity and to be used for a variety of things, from detecting individual viruses. But the clear application in the near term is to use each nanotube as an on-off transistor. And that's underway at all the big semiconductor firms and all the big laboratories.
Who is the next Intel of the future? Is there a company out there that is really making some headway with all of this?
George, I know a lot of people invest in this field, and I have enough training in the law to resist answering a question with any specificity. The one thing you know, whenever there's a gold rush, and we are definitely in a gold rush now, if you just go to the patent office and look at the number of patents in this country, especially in Japan, filed on nano devices, especially nanotube devices, that you know there's always going to be hundreds, maybe thousands of competitors and a small number of survivors. I mean, it's
sure.
Brutally Darwinian. I mean, but you might guess to first order, AMD or Intel Corporation, but those big boys, I would think, would probably tend to acquire the more successful small firms, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of very talented nanotech researchers who formed companies, and the venture capital money that sort of froze up in this country, George, after the dot-com bust, which was a software, as you know, enterprise,
sure,
is now starting very cautiously to leak back out and to fund these companies. There's great. But anyway, there's also a lot of companies, George, that are just pushing the term nano and rushing to trademark it, nano this and nano that. For example, a lot of us do that, but not in a hype sense. My novel, Nanotime, I think I was the first to introduce that. But nano has been applied as a hyphenated adjective just about every noun you can think of now. So you've got to be careful. You really want to check it. But there are several companies, and I would advise anybody doing that to carefully look at their list of patents and go to the patent office and before one invests in it. Again, it's very unlikely that you can pick a winning movie in advance.
Well, that's true. And I would guess that most of them, if not all of them, they're really not making much money right now, are they?
You know, again, I wouldn't want to defame anybody. There are several gadgets. What we haven't seen yet is that killer app with a nanotube. They are in baseballs. There are nano-like fibers now woven into clothes to give nano pants. I have a shirt that's technically a nano shirt, so if you spill water on it, it tends to beat off more like water on a Teflon-coated frying pan. And it's been added to paints and things like that. But what we really haven't seen, a lot of people are working on it, all these large semiconductor companies in particular, is the nano processor using carbon nanotubes, or also for flat panel displays. The Korean companies are working on it as well. There are many prototypes out, and everyone's purporting we'll see it in the next 6 months or 12 months, but I think we will. Just don't know which firm will do it first.
What is the push, Bart, for smaller, for faster computer technology through the use of these billion transistors on a chip or even the nano technology? Why do we want it to just get smaller and faster? What's the benefit?
You know, I think, George, we all want a free lunch or something as close to that as we can possibly get. I mean, the number of transistors on a chip, say in 1970, was just a few thousand. In 1990, they crossed the million mark, and I say we're now about to cross the billion mark. And as you do that, you get incredible economic efficiency. For example, consumer electronics now are driven by chips, and that's, you know, more than $1 trillion in product out there. That's a lot of product. And those chips have in it, by the way, fuzzy logic and neural algorithms and a variety of others. And in that spirit, when you get faster computation and cheaper computation, and in many ways cooler computation, because a lot of this is hot electronically, but when you get that, George, you can implement a lot of the mathematics and the algorithms that are out there. You can do more things. So, for example, you could do more image processing to give you real-time 3D perspectives, where in the past that might have taken longer. You get those free streaming videos, for example, on your downloads, or compression algorithms and a variety of other things. And to enhance in that line things like virtual reality and just about everything else that we do that relies on computation. We've been limited by our ability in many ways to crunch numbers, you know, since World War II. And we're just knocking that down every 18 months, cutting that cost in half. And as wonderful the applications are now, the set of research results, the set of algorithms, the set of theorems and the stuff that people like me do, professors, the papers, it's vast. It's hundreds of thousands, it's millions of papers, I would presume, overall. And most of that has never been implemented. And there'll be a lot more of that coming down the road. So fantastic algorithms to communicate more effectively, to create virtual worlds, and ultimately, you know, to monitor your health and, I think, to modify your mind.